Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts
and boxing. Because we're taking over boxing.
We're now we taking over, yo. We are covering everything. Football, if it comes up.
Right. We're going to get in depth with those Canelo Alvarez, Sylvester Stallone commercials I don't quite understand.
Yes, we are going
to
get
to figure those out.
We're going to break those down so that even you can understand them.
We've only got an hour, though, so we better get to it.
All right. So there's quite a bit of insanity this week, which is saying a lot considering last week. But we will start with this past weekend's events. I feel like we should start with the Chiesa and Lee fight only because there's controversy that people just want to talk about.
There's a couple things, and we can start with that. I do still think it's interesting. We talked a little bit back. I was going back through the podcast. We talked a little while ago about no big fight feels yet, and a lot of people are starting to kind of pick up on that now. And I do think it's interesting that Bellator NYC may be one of the most memorable events we've had of the year. It's something that we're really not going to forget at this point, just because of the strangeness of some of the fights and then some of the things that happened, and of course that main event as well. So there was a lot of weird things going on there, but still, even with all the weirdness, I said this after we watched it at Celebration Cinema, it was an all right event. I'll give that a solid B. It kept my interest. There were a couple things going on. Maybe not all the fights were great, but there was certainly weirdness and intrigue to keep me involved. I can't really say the same about the UFC event this past weekend.
So then let's stay with Bellator then.
Okay.
Okay, since you've kind of set
this. But we do have that controversy to get to.
Yeah, and we'll get to it for sure. But I mean, we needed to cover both of them. This one was clearly the more interesting of the two. And what was more interesting to kind of set the stage is the Bader-Davis fight, which was not great, peaked at 1.1 million viewers, which for context was better than the Lee Chiesa fight did on Sunday night.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot, like,
well, Sunday night is a big factor too. Why are they still so damn late on a Sunday?
Pump the brakes on what, yeah, and we'll talk about that. But I just wanted to set the stage that if we're talking about winners and losers in respect to advertising dollars, all variables, Sunday night, et cetera, aside, it appears that Bellator NYC outdrew the UFC event. And technically, that was called Bellator 180 before they went to the pay-per-view. So
yeah,
that was the demarcation. So
that was kind of cool how they did that.
Yeah, so Bellator 180 outdrew the UFC Fight Night with Chiesa and Lee. So just so you have some context. And the fight to talk about is clearly Bader and Phil Davis. And you're going to want to talk about James Gallagher because that's what you want to do.
Oh, yeah, James Gallagher.
And
first round.
Bader, who we talked about last week, put on a fight against Phil Davis that, like I said, it's not a memorable one. And guys, one of the things that's interesting when you see people match up again, you, of course, everybody gets to see them a second time and kind of reassess where they are. And these two guys just might be guys that are a terrible matchup.
Yeah.
They just nullify everything about each other, and therefore it can't get going. We thought in Sweden it was the time. It wasn't the time. It's that these two guys are so evenly matched that it's really hard to get a great fight out of either one of them because both of their skill sets sort of null the other one.
Well, I mean, we saw that roll right into what we were worried was going to be the start of a bad night with the Douglas Lima Lorenz Larkin fight. That was a very similar feeling fight in the fact that it went all the rounds and then it went to decision. So I thought it was really kind of interesting to see those two fights back to back. We didn't actually get to watch them back to back, but it was kind of interesting because by the time we got to the third round of that Larkin fight, you could tell the crowd was going to kind of going like, okay, all right, guys, are we going to see some fights or what's going on?
Yeah, but however, when you go back and watch the Lima Larkin fight, as that's a great transition, I really felt that Lima is the real deal. You know,
the skill sets and the way they matched up and
yep,
how they were kind of just going at each other and boy, I'm nullifying this, I'm nullifying that. So it was kind of interesting. Obviously not a split decision in that fight, but still a similar vibe there.
But good big, huge win for Lima over Larkin. Bader, of course, is now your champion in Bellator at 205, so congrats to him. James Gallagher keeps with the Conor McGregor swag and wins via RNC in spectacular fashion over Machida at 222 of the first round. Heather Hardy, in her debut, wins over Yager in the third round at 447, which gets us into, as we were just
and
talking...
And nobody pooped in that fight, so that's, yes, that was the highlight of Ladies MMA this weekend.
Yes, which we'll get to, right? Zach Freeman shocks the world with Aaron Pico, 24 seconds. Guillotine choke, technically, as I was saying, and I think it was, they were saying it in the broadcast, what's called a power guillotine. So when you take your flat end of your hand and you push your fist into their neck, it makes it really, really difficult to get out of the power guillotine. And he doesn't. And his first fight, what I thought was funny is Brendan Schaub is now on this broadcast team,
right,
who said prior to the pay-per-view starting, so as the Bader fight finishes, they go live on pay-per-view, and he says, there wasn't a stage big enough for Aaron Pico. You may think that MSG is a big stage. It's not even big enough for this guy. There isn't a stage big enough for this guy. And then after that fight, he goes, he's going to regroup and everything will be fine. He'll still be your champion, I promise.
See, this is why I just play on my phone in between fights and I don't listen to what's happening on the screen.
And what I think is interesting is that may or may not be true, but you said something very fascinating as we were at the theater that I think needs to be repeated, and I've heard it a couple times this week already. Mentally, this is a hard thing to get over.
Oh, yeah.
You took one punch and that was it.
Yep.
One uppercut, you're out cold, 24 seconds. At MSG, in front of people that know you, to a guy that most people didn't really realize and weren't paying attention to. And credit to Zach Freeman for not getting caught up in the hype. And one thing about Zach is he fought for a championship in another organization. I believe it was a five-round fight where he had one hand. Mm-hmm. He had broken the hand. So when you're doing your debut, if you go back to the Heather Hardy fight, that's really what you want out of this thing, right? Is like, it wasn't perfect.
No.
You learn some stuff and you got to win. Zach Freeman, what was he, 8-2 prior to this fight? Like, you're not really setting this kid up for success.
Yeah, he was solid. It's funny how much we learn about him after the win at this point. But yeah, like I said, the confidence is going to be a big issue mentally. I mean, another thing too, obviously he got caught and that's what led to the submission, but you would expect a guy get caught, go on the ground with the wrestling pedigree that Pico had and be able to do something, and all he did was roll over and get choked out.
Well, and okay, some nuance to that is from that position though, Freeman wrapped up his legs so he couldn't move anywhere, right? So this was game over.
Right, but I understand this was very masterful and you explained the choke very well, but it's still, you're on the ground. And if you're a wrestler, that's what you want to feel like you're good at. Okay, oh man, he caught me. We're going to the ground. Oh, he's coming to the ground. Fight's over.
Yes.
I mean, mentally, I think that's almost harder than just the one punch, is knowing you went to the ground and then right. there was nothing you were able to do.
Yes.
You got wrapped up like a boa constrictor around you and you were ready to go to sleep.
And then you did go to sleep. Second title fight, I should say, on the card. It's hard to keep track of this one. Second
title of NYC.
Of NYC. Second title fight of the card. Brent Primus, a win over Michael Chandler and his non-broken ankle. That's just nerve damage?
Is that all it was?
That's all it was.
Yeah, it was flopping around there a little
Holy
bit.
Holy cow, man.
There was a scream inside Celebration Cinema. I won't point out that it may have been an employee of Celebration Cinema that we know very well, that we enjoyed watching the fights with. I just heard a scream inside the theater as if Freddy Krueger had just shown up, and it was definitely difficult to kind of watch that happen. Almost as difficult as watching Brett Primus's post-fight speech, where you would have thought he'd just beat Rocky.
Yeah, and
going back to our Sylvester Stallone reference.
And that was fascinating, and I think, I don't remember who it was on Twitter, so I'm sorry I can't give the right attribution. But
everybody on Twitter said, you can't win like that.
Well, everyone said that, but somebody said, Primus is going to go back and look at this and be embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be embarrassed, because you didn't actually win, and to be honest with you, Chandler looked like he was taking it to you with one leg.
He did. He looked like he still had a shot at that thing. If not for the stool, I don't know if the doctor would have called it.
Yes, if not for the red stool.
I'm not even joking.
No, I know. If it wasn't for the red stool, we might still have our current champ in Michael Chandler. So
how tough, how good does he look in that loss, though? He looked amazing in that loss.
I mean, as long as he doesn't have to fight the stool again, he looks
right.
awesome.
I mean, he looked like he was just going out there and he was going to go take his head off with one leg.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I think in this sport, sometimes when you meet people like Chandler, Chandler's one of those guys, not unlike Conor McGregor, that high belief in himself, I can do this, this is how I'm motivating myself. When guys like that in some way, shape, or form stand up and say things like, cut it off, I'll keep fighting, I think you wrap it up to hyperbole and move on. I don't think he was kidding on Saturday night. Like, I think he, if somebody had come in and went, hey, we will cut it off and you can keep fighting, he would be like, all right, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
A terrible, terrible decision to
right,
do that. But
right,
he's that type of guy who I think he would have
Civil War style, just get a hacksaw,
yep, just
go
cut
at
it all off, and here we go. That is going to be a – I will say this with a bit of a hedge. That is going to be a terrible rematch for Primus, assuming it was not the leg kicks that set up the ankle to kind of go numb or whatever nerve damage happened. Right,
and I don't want to take any of that away, but it was just like the exuberance in the post-fight seemed a little unwarranted, and I get it, you're champion now, but it just seemed a little off-putting. Like you said, you know, Twitter just raked him over the coals, and he will probably go back and look at that. And, you know, if he were in a quiet moment and telling the truth, he'll probably be a little bit embarrassed about it. I do like how this set up, though. And I mentioned this last week before we get into some of the other the main event and then the weird filler fight.
Right.
Now I know what's going on essentially in Bellator. As a casual fan of Bellator, I know what's going on. I know Michael Chandler's a badass who just lost his belt and is probably going to get a rematch. I know Douglas Lima's legit. And I know Ryan Bader's your champion and he beat Phil Davis. So I've got a decent understanding now of their champions, and going forward, that will make me more interested in the product. I thought they did a very good job using this card underneath to kind of set up the future of Bellator and go, okay, here's our champions, here's what's happening, take a look at these guys, and oh yeah, you're going to get your Fedor fight, and you're going to get your Chael Sonnen fight coming up at the top of the card.
And for all the things that went wrong on Saturday night, and there was quite a few of them that yes, went wrong, that was the one thing that I thought they got really, really right. They did not get the timing right, which we'll talk about in a second. But they were able to, for the casual fan, for the people that were hanging out in the theater, you know, some of them super big fans, some of them just like to see the MMA right, on the big screen. They did a masterful job. And mind you, a masterful job without playing 812 promos in between every fight and making the event longer than it needed to be, of absolutely setting the stage like, here's three divisions that we focus on a lot here at Bellator. Here are your three champs. Two of them are new. One of them is a continued defender who just beat Lorenz Larkin, right? The setup for you to walk away.
And here's some of your UFC guys mixed in, yep, and that's why they're legit and those type of things.
Yeah, and we've got an event coming up, and you might recognize these guys like Roy Nelson and Benson Henderson, right? So they did a great job of getting people reignited into the brand who may just have shown up to want to see the pay-per-view because of the top of the card or the fight we're just about to talk about, to get you in and go, hey, this is what we've been doing while you've been away or not paying attention. Welcome. We hope you enjoy what we've got going on.
Hmm.
And, you know, further to kind of wrap that up, Scott Coker did say that they will be doing another pay-per-view in the early part of 2018. So you won't see anything between now and the end of the year, but there will be another one as they kind of figure out all the things that went wrong and hope that they don't go wrong going forward.
New York.
Right. And
I know they want to do it in MSG, and that was fun, but, you know, running MSG now, it seems like everybody's got some weird New York stories now.
Well, even let's go back to the Lima fight, because some judge scored that 50-45.
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, let's move along from that before we get caught up.
Okay, sorry. I just want to point out how terrible New York is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the questions I asked on Twitter this weekend.
Chael did at the end of the event.
Yes. Well, and one of the questions I asked on Twitter that I just wanted to point out, like, if you're an MMA fighter, what is worse for your career, fighting in New York or having Mario Yamasaki ref your fight? Which one of those two is worse?
Sophie's choice there for MMA fighters. Going back with that reference.
All right. And then the first main event, which, to be honest with you, I like this. Like, here's this main event, and then there's another main event coming up, as opposed to doing co and main. These are two main events, not back to back.
I know you'll get to that.
I'll get to it. Matt Mitrione and Fedor Emelianenko with the double rainbow knockdown that you just saw Mitrione spring to action,
mm-hmm,
and finish it at a minute 14. And one of the things to point out about Fedor is, if you look over the life of his career, that's a situation. Well, the double knockdown is not a situation he's been in a lot of times, but he's usually in the oh crap, I'm in trouble position, and then figures a way out of the trouble and then ends the fight. That's been kind of the lifeblood of his career. At the tail end of his career, he needs to not be in that position, and Saturday night showed you why.
Yeah, it was a quick end. Do you want to see Fedor fight anymore after that fight? I know we'll get to BJ Penn here when we get to UFC. This doesn't look as dire as BJ Penn.
Yeah, no, it does not.
I mean, and the heavyweights, they hit, they land, you're going to go out. It doesn't matter who you are, especially if you're an older Fedor. Do you like the matchup that everybody's been speculating about? It looked like Chal was trying to make it happen. Chal and Fedor, you want to see that fight?
Totally fine with that.
You're fine with that?
Totally fine with
that.
In fact, out of this whole thing, the guy that I don't want to see fight again is Vanderlei, because I think Vanderlei and BJ Penn are in the same category.
Or Tito.
No, I don't. The Tito thing was weird, and I don't even want to mess up our own show with the weirdness that is Tito.
Well, I couldn't figure out what he was trying to do because he retired.
Which is why I don't really want to put him in here. But I don't know. I don't want to
see
Tito.
Did you hear
the
crowd?
Yes.
They were chanting F you Tito.
Yes.
Because he wouldn't stop shutting up during the main event.
Yep. So. Yes, he did. So Mitrione is your winner. I like I said, I don't think you learned a lot about Mitrione in this fight other than he is the longer, faster, easier to scramble to position fighter, because that punch from Fedor landed clean. Both guys land at the same time, and it becomes a fight of who gets up quicker. And Mitrione said it in the post fight, where he's like, oh crap, he's still down.
Right, exactly. When you get up, you go, whoa, what's going on?
So, like I said, I'm more than happy to see Fedor and Chael if that's what we're going to do. Because I didn't think that one was as bad as the third round of BJ Penn and Dennis Seaver, which we'll get to. For some reason, after all of that insanity and Twitter explodes and you're now getting what we will call forever in infamy, the Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner peak, right? Where now people are texting each other going, oh my God, did you see this fight? You got to tune. Chael's about to fight, right? All that stuff is happening on Twitter and in text and in Snapchat and Facebook. And they go, yeah, well, we're not really going to do those two main events back to back because we found a Gracie. So we're going to put him on.
That was weird. You and I were looking at each other trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And I found out later that it was basically pulled off the prelims.
Yes. And like most people thought it wasn't going to happen. And then for whatever reason, they wanted to mess up timing. And this is what I'm going to say to both organizations. And I said it on Twitter on Sunday night. I say it every time we have a Sunday night event. We need to start these things at 9 o'clock. Every single one of them needs to start at 9 o'clock. And we already gave you the money. We're not necessarily in the quantity over quality sort of play here. I don't need more fights. I do not need 6 fights on my main card. If I stayed through Spike through this, I'm good.
Yeah, that's how deep we got into it. It would have been one thing if maybe they would have decided earlier in the card, like, okay, we're going to put these guys on because timing-wise, we're not sure what's going on, or you're just going to deal with it. But yeah, that was definitely a weird situation. We saw half of the theater get up and leave where we were watching to go get a snack or something. Like, okay, I guess I'll go do something else.
Well, because this is where your theory falls down. I don't know who either. I train on and off in jiu-jitsu. I know who the Gracies are. I don't know who this guy is, right? And I certainly don't know who Dave Marfone is. So putting them on in the middle doesn't really help your theory of, like, let's reset the organization and here's what we're all about. Because this seemed to, as we saw in the theater and you saw on Twitter, come from left field. Because earlier in the day, journalists in the MMA space were like, hey, where's this fight that was on the prelims? How has it been scratched from everything? And then it was like, this is the wrong.
Oh, there it is.
This is the wrong type of Easter egg, Scott.
Right, exactly.
Tucker, this is the wrong type of Easter egg.
It was, yeah. That was weird, and it kind of. Luckily, it was over in 2 rounds. I mean, if that thing would have gone on for 3 full rounds to a decision,
it would have killed.
This would have been even worse.
Killed
but
the event.
At least it didn't do that, because I mean, we knew probably the main event, if Chal were going to win, was going to go to a decision, and that's what most people thought was going to happen. And so we knew we still had a main event that was going to be 15 minutes plus a decision coming up. If Chael were to win. So it's kind of interesting.
And when we get to that main event, that's exactly what Chael did, because he has to, guys. If you look at that fight, any time Vanderlei had a shot, he tagged him, right? And tagged him in a bad way. And Chael can't take those, and we've learned that.
And Chael is a lot older, too. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's always had a weird thing in fights where it wouldn't be a Chael win if he's not looking like he's about to lose the whole damn thing at, like, 2 minutes in. So it wouldn't be a Chael fight. But as he gets older, that's going to become more prevalent, because that's not That's not Wanderlei Silva from Pride hitting him. That's an older, slower Wanderlei Silva, and he still caught him a couple times. So much so, Wanderlei still kind of thinks he won the fight, if not for just forgetting to train takedown defense after 20 years in MMA.
And at no point did he win that fight, so that's not
Did even... you see his statements afterwards?
No, I saw them.
He's going to go back. I just need to tweak a couple things and go back to my takedown defense. Like, dude, you've been doing this a long time. Everybody knew what was going to happen.
Yes.
You forgot to train it, or what are you saying, bro?
So that's exactly what happened, and Chael is your winner at the end of the night, cuts a spectacular promo about how terrible NYC is, and does what Chael does.
Dismisses the Tito win entirely.
Yes.
Which was hilarious.
Does what he does, says that he beat Tito in a minute.
He didn't say he beat him. He said he made him tap in less than a minute, and everybody had to go, oh, yeah, that's right. There was that weird tappy thing.
Yes. So made him tap in less than a minute and sets up this Fedor Chael fight, which, look, the one thing that I like about Bellator is they're able to set up these weird matches that we've been calling the seniors division and giving some lifeblood to these fighters that clearly don't want to hang it up. That's not me saying that they should continue to fight, but I can't tell them, nor really can anyone else, tell them to stop fighting. So if Chael wants to fight and Fedor wants to fight and whoever wants to fight, they've set up a place where they're at least matching them up with non-serial killers like Yair Rodriguez, which will end your career faster than anything that's currently happening in Bellator in this space. These guys will never fight for belts, nor should they. But the tops of these cards, or at least near the tops of these cards, I think makes for an interesting space. And I know that you've talked about this a lot, is that wouldn't it be nice if there was this division where, you know, they don't really move up in rankings, but they still get to eat or fight or whatever it is driving them.
Here's ultimately, people have to remember that sport is about spectacle and dollars and entertainment. And there's certainly an entertainment value and an interest level with some of these fighters that doesn't necessarily translate to placing them in what you would call, like, you know, I think the Dennis Seaver fight was interesting. It wasn't as bad as it could have been for BJ Penn, as we'll get to talking about that in a minute. But I mean, in other instances, we've seen guys that are older have to fight a monster in the division because, you know, the UFC needs to get that guy moved up and that guy some legitimate wins, quote unquote, and things of that nature. Bellator's got a little more free spirit in that regard, where they can have a guy like King Mo come in and do some of these crazier fights that maybe you wouldn't see. A guy like Chael come in. I mean, Chael, King Mo, I'd pay for that.
Sure.
That'd be a lot of fun. So, I mean, you've got a lot of interesting, fun dynamics that seem to be easier to develop in Bellator than you see in the UFC at this point.
Well, and I think because they're building two different products, or at least we would like to think they are building two different products. Some of the stuff that happened on Sunday night leads you to believe otherwise, but it seems that they're building two different products. And I do like that there's a space for these guys, and for as long as it's safe for them to do so, I guess I don't necessarily have a problem with it. I do have a problem if Silva is going to continue. I think he looked slow and terrible, and he had one weapon. And I think in this space, at this time in history, one-weapon fighters are extremely dangerous in that one position and extremely vulnerable in every other position to get very, very, very hurt at age 40, right? Or 38 or whatever, right? Like whoever we're talking about. Of those guys, I would like him to stop immediately, if not sooner.
Yeah, I'm just more thinking along the lines. It used to be like, you know, we had a place for Randy Couture. We had a place for an older Chuck Liddell. And we don't seem to have that place in the UFC right now. And I'm not saying it's wrong of UFC and what their product's doing, but I am going to say I find it very interesting that at this point, and I'm trying not to be a victim of the moment, but that Bellator pay-per-view is the most memorable pay-per-view of the year so far.
For some good reasons and some not so, but yes.
But regardless, I mean, it took me a couple minutes to dig back through, and we haven't had a ton of pay-per-views because there's a lot of people talking about the August cancellation for UFC, which was actually not booked, but it was just kind of obviously with the dynamic with the Conor fight. Those type of things, they don't want to fight for those dollars, and they don't really have the fighters for it right now. So I do think it's interesting. Bellator NYC, that's the card I'm remembering so far.
Yep.
Until we get to Jones and Cormier, that's going to be the most interesting card of the year as far as I'm concerned. And we've had heavyweight title fights in UFC. We've had light heavyweight title fights. The Rumble Cormier fight was this year, right?
Yep.
It's one of those things. Yeah, I can't, like, nothing is sticking out. And again, it's just a weird dynamic. And, you know, I get it. Bellator only has to do this once or twice a year so they can kind of throw their gimmicks at it, throw Fedor at you, get Chow back out there and do those things. But I still find it very, very interesting to hear people talk about that card and to know that it seems like they've really got a they flicked a little bit of a switch that hasn't been flicked yet this year by the UFC.
Well, and what I said earlier stands here. Nobody told the UFC to do 62 events a year.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to do that.
Right.
Nobody said, you know what I want? One event every 3 days. Well, like, nobody said that.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, as we'll kind of transition a little bit here, other than that weird press conference happening between Chiesa and Kevin Lee, there was not a ton of interest in this card. Obviously, Johnny Hendricks, people wanted to kind of see what happened there, and we'll talk about that in a minute. BJ Penn could bring some interest in. But, I mean, I'm going to be honest, Eric. I fell asleep after that Johnny Hendricks fight because they started running their promos, and uh-huh. I don't know what time it was. Was it midnight almost, remember correctly?
It was after midnight when that fight happened.
So, yeah, I watched the Bosch fight, and that was very interesting. And, you know, we're hearing that Johnny might have been sick, and that's why there was a weight issue and those type of things. So we'll talk about that in just a minute, but – I mean, what is the purpose of these cards, I have to wonder sometimes? Because you could have taken some of these fights, put them together with a couple championship fights, and put on a pay-per-view. I have to ask. I mean, we saw the Cerrone fight is out now.
Yep.
And that was one of the more interesting things coming up on this July pay-per-view. How interested are you in that July UFC card at this point?
Well, not really, and I think they're going to learn that. And I think that's part of the reason either they knew this or serendipity that they've moved it actually slightly away from July 4th weekend, right? As opposed to putting it on this weekend, it is actually next weekend with a back-to-back event with the Ultimate Fighter Redemption season finale is on Friday night.
Yeah, they stopped choking each other. I stopped watching.
So that's on Friday. Well, and they're not even fighting on Friday night, right?
No,
so
they're not fighting.
That's on Friday. And then on Saturday.
There was
Saturday,
a snake involved, though, wasn't there?
Yes.
What happened?
I don't.
Did Jake the Snake come back?
No.
DDP Yoga?
Right.
These are all ideas. These are free ones, UFC. I know the UFC intern that's listening that has to write down what's being said. It's free ideas. Bring in DDP Yoga. Do something with that show. You had me for a little bit when they were choking each other every half hour.
So you've got some Amanda Nunes is defending her belt at the top of this. I don't think she's going to be a draw in the way that they think she's going to be. You've got Robert Whittaker on this going against Yoel Romero for the interim championship at 185.
I'd entirely now, and I'm very actually interested in that fight as like a championship kind of setup and see what's going to happen here. But I had kind of forgotten about that fight being there as well because, again, it's hard with these interim titles. It's hard with Amanda Nunes because she didn't. If she would have been the one to go out there and beat Ronda and then hold the title for as long, you know, up until this date, it'd be a different story. We talked about this on previous podcasts, though. You've got so many levels removed by the time she got to fight a clearly mentally broken Ronda Rousey as far as fighting goes, that, you know, she didn't get any of the rub or any of the shine of that championship fight that she could have gotten with a direct win over Ronda rather than being Holly Holm and Miesha Tate removed at that point.
And you've got Verdum on that card against Overeem and Pettis and Jim Miller, which... it's okay. It's not worth $60, though. It, you know, it just isn't. And I think they clearly know that that's coming. So that when you get to 214, that's when all of a sudden it becomes super interesting. And we'll talk about the Sunday event, but I do want to stop here for a second because of how all of this is connected. So Romero and Whittaker are fighting for the interim championship that is setting up for them to fight Michael Bisping. And it appears that the Michael Bisping GSP thing has been shelved because it was announced this morning that you have Woodley and Damian Maya for the championship at 170. Woodley, your current champ, will defend against Damian Maya. Winner of that gets GSP. So GSP now going down to 170 to fight for a belt against either Woodley or Damian
Maya.
And
that's happening at the September pay-per-view?
September or October, yes.
Okay.
All announced this morning, so know that I didn't have time to dig into all of that. But that's how all of this is connected. So while we were waiting for this Bisping-GSP fight to happen, it's clearly not at this point. He's going down to 170. He's taking on either... Woodley or Maya, whoever wins at 14. Cerrone and Lawler has also moved to 14, so that makes that card way more interesting than it was an hour and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Although,
well, it's always more interesting too. And again, I don't want to take anything too much away from Amanda Nunes. It's always going to be more interesting because we've got a legitimate championship fight. And you know,
we've got two, right?
I'm digging Tyrone Woodley
Yeah, well, and you've got Cormier and Jones at the top of that, right? So this card becomes instantly
Oh, wait, they're putting them both on the July card?
That's the is this July or is this? Yeah, July 29th. Yeah, is the 214.
So wait, Woodley's on that card now?
Woodley and Maya are on that card.
Oh, okay.
So you've got Jones, Cormier, Woodley, Maya, and the third fight.
Oh, you were saying the fight, the other fight would be later in the year. I didn't realize that. Yeah. No, that's, wow, that's a good looking card.
And you've got this amazing fight at 140 with Sterling and Henan Barao, which I can't wait for. So 14, way more interesting than 213. But all pointing out that, again, no one asked them to do all of these things.
No. No, if we had, imagine if they had one July pay-per-view.
And all of those, all of that was on.
Well, they don't even need to use all of that, but they could mix and match their pieces. And guess what? They could have probably put together. And again, I know some of this is John Jones because he's not clear. They want to get him clear to fight.
Yes.
And I think they could have technically had him on 14.
Nope. It would have been the 11th, right? Of
July. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, so I'm guessing their scheduled masters and things like that. They, of course, oh, yeah, that's the week after 4th of July. We always do the card there. But if they would have had more room to kind of mix and match the puzzle pieces, I'm not saying you have to create one giant super card with the two cards, but you could see a more, you could see a, maybe a different development where maybe the week after McGregor and Mayweather, we've got a pretty good card the first week of September.
Well, and if we can play, you know,
couch, if we're staying out of August,
if we can play couch matchmakers for a second, because then your card becomes Cormier and Jones with Amanda Nunes and Shevchenko.
Yeah, and you put her on that card.
That's your card.
Yes.
Then your next card would be Woodley, Maya at the top, Whitaker, and Romero at the co-main.
So and now you could put Overeem on that card, yep, for some of your big guy.
Yes.
You know, it's just, it's weird, like you said. And one of those cards, like you said, you don't need a million fights a year. One of those cards could have had Kevin Lee, Michael Chiesa on it.
Yes, and which leads us back to Sunday night. So Chiesa and Lee are in the driver's seat of that card, and you see a technical submission, rear naked choke, at 4:37 of the first round. And let me say two things before we get too far into this. I want to say openly and as loud as I possibly can, I was 100% wrong about Kevin Lee. His improvement is dramatic and the real deal. He looked spectacular.
Well, I mean, if you can drop those 12 to 6 elbows, a lot of guys look a lot better.
Well, there was only one of those, right? But I just think,
how many does it take, Eric?
Clearly, answer.
You've trained much more in your life than I ever have even come close to training.
Clearly,
if you just were to walk over to this side and let me just throw one 12 to 6.
It's one. The answer is one.
That seems like enough.
The Tootsie Roll Pop Owl would tell you that it's one 12 to 6.
One 12 to 6 elbow.
All of that to say that, again, these are not things that the fighters have to control. That's Mario's job.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
But outside of that,
and I don't even necessarily think it should be illegal, but the problem is when it's illegal, fighters tend to, they train a certain way, and this goes back to my eye poking and holding the cage and all of those things. It's not about whether or not knees on the ground should be legal or not. It's whether or not that's actually the rule. And if the rule is you can't get elbowed like that, Michael Chiesa is not expecting that strike at all, and it comes out of nowhere. And yeah, the ref should call it. I think that's the thing that got lost in the whole technical submission controversy, is that elbow changed the fight immediately.
It changed the fight. Leading up to it, though, Kevin was in all the right positions. Kevin was doing all of the right things. Afterwards, Kevin was doing all of the right things, was super slick on the ground. If you listen to Luke Thomas's podcast, I do agree with him that maybe it's not as big of a deal as people are making it out to be. However, his three examples, I think, are flawed in the way that all three examples he showed of refs doing something, the fighter in question, their hands went to what he was calling phase three, touch the mat, which Michael's hands did not. They were... And he was talking through these three phases. Hand fighting, arms go down 1 degree and are not hand fighting, hands touch the mat, fight's over, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't get the hands touch the mat, fight's over.
And that was a little bit of a robbery from Kevin Lee, too. I mean,
On both sides.
Because now, I mean, there's people that want a rematch, and
no,
honestly,
just stop.
But you've got this weird 12 to 6 elbow, and you've got this weird finish, so now there's always going to be this fuel for this type of rematch, and you know it's not fair to either fighter to see what happens here.
It isn't, but the fact that, I mean, if we're playing armchair quarterback after this thing is over, the 12 to 6 wasn't caught, right? It wasn't like it was a point deduction or anything like that. There was no reset. There was nothing like that. So it's hard to reverse engineer a penalty for that in making him go through a rematch.
It's not reverse engineering the penalty, though, but it's certainly a dynamic in there where you can go, maybe he could have fought the choke a different way. Maybe that choke wouldn't have even come close because, I mean,
he wasn't unconscious.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, that's all I'm saying there. It's not fair to either fighter in this regard, and it's got to get fixed, and I don't know how you fix it because, you know, the UFC, a lot of people still don't realize they have nothing to do with the referees.
Nope.
Zero. That's why Dana White can go and blast a referee because he has nothing to do with it. If he was actually hiring the guys or putting him in the cage, he'd have to definitely couch his sentiments and go into the back wherever they – but they don't do that. They don't hire them.
No.
You know, and the only times the UFC might have anything to do with a ref is some of those weird countries where they self-regulate, but then even then – They have a couple people that take care of that for them, and I don't think they've done that since the merger anyhow, so I'm not sure even how they'd handle it at this point.
And as of right now, it appears this morning Dana White was talking about after the Mayweather-McGregor fight that it appears it will be Conor and Nurmagomedov for the title whenever that comes this fall.
Yeah,
which
we'll wait and see that.
Yes, we will, because he might have a really big hankering for tiramisu after the summer's over or whatever.
$100 million worth of tiramisu.
Oh, not that. No,
no. I'm talking about Connor.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll wait and see about that part. But if he comes back, that's what they want to do, which would lead to the feud that started on Sunday night between Ferguson and Kevin Lee, which might put them in this card that has not been announced yet in December. And the reason people are talking about this event in December is because if you know anything about Joe Rogan, you know that he books comedy specials the Friday night before an event, and there is a Friday night in Detroit on his schedule, yet not a UFC announced. So if you're playing...
And they haven't been in Detroit in probably since 5 years?
Since 123, right?
Have they? Yeah, they haven't been there for a lesser show, have they?
Not that I know of. I think it was 123 was the last one.
Another thing, just because we're, you know, obviously our proximity, we know a little more about this. There's a new arena, and new arenas, you're able to make more money usually.
Yes.
So the Little Caesars Arena is pulling in a lot of concerts and things like that. The UFC actually hasn't run in Detroit since running in Joe Louis Arena back in the 90s. Obviously, their show in the Detroit area, the Rampage pay-per-view was at the Palace of Auburn Hills. So
yes, it was.
That would be an interesting dynamic to kind of think about, too.
So your co-main event on Sunday night was Tim Bosch and a man who can clearly not make weight, Johnny Hendricks, who got TKO'd at round 2, 46 seconds, and as of this recording, has yet to be fired.
Now he says...
Fired.
Now he says...
Totally fired.
He says that... Yeah, you said that when we were watching...
Totally fired.
Bellator NYC.
Totally
actually,
fired.
We were talking about... I said, what about Johnny Hendricks? You said fired before I got Rick's
well,
out.
I said fired because he didn't make weight. I stand behind it because he looked terrible and out of shape and all of that stuff. And I don't, whatever you're going to say, this is your job.
I'm just telling you what he said happened. Do you want to know what happened?
Sure, why not?
He said his family had a flu-like sickness. He had been fine the whole time.
Don't have a family.
Up until fight week. And he had actually gotten sick, so he had to take fluids in. He wasn't able to take a day off in weight cutting, essentially, but he still had to take fluids. So he said he was sick and he had to take in fluids because of that sickness. So there.
Uh-huh.
Eric's well, not so, having any of it.
Well, no, because here's why.
This is why when I worked for you, I hated if I had a tummy ache on a Monday, because I knew you were going to be like that.
Yes, I was going to be like that.
Yeah, like that. Monday tummy aches. I don't think I ever took a Monday sick day just because I didn't want to deal with it. I would have to be so sick on a Monday to take a sick day.
Yes, you would.
When you were my boss.
Okay. So here...
Eric wants off this topic because he knows I'm 100% right.
You are 100% right. And
go ahead. What are you mad about with Hendricks here on your laptop?
So he obviously had weight issues for his whole career. It's been tough for him to get down. But he actually misses weight twice last year. Once against Gastelum, once against Magny, and again now because he went up to middleweight and was only able to successfully get to middleweight one time, right, prior to this fight.
Interesting.
So my issue is not that you got sick because that does happen, right? My issue is that two things. One, if you got sick and didn't notify the UFC, much like your Monday tummy ache example, right? Like if you don't call your boss on Sunday night and say that you're going to be sick and then just don't show up, you're in a lot more trouble than if Sunday night you go, hey, it's Monday, I have another tummy ache, I'm not going to make it in.
This is my, I know I had 3 Monday tummy aches last year, now I've got another one this year.
But then at least I know and I go, okay, you're sick, I'm sorry you feel sick, what things do I have to do tomorrow to make sure that your stuff gets done? to Dana White or whoever, like whatever that.
But they can't do anything with it. I mean,
I'm not saying they do anything with it. What I'm saying is, if you didn't tell them before you stepped on the scale and then missed weight, and then 3 days after the fight go, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell
and
you.
And that's what I'm not sure of.
I had the avian bird flu. That sounds reasonable, right?
That usually sounds like something Dana would have brought up in the post-fight presser.
Like, knowing full well, like, hey, you know, and Tim.
You know, Johnny had a rough week. He was sick.
Tim wouldn't have gone, you know, and teeing him off on Twitter and in the media because they all would have known, hey, he's going to give you 20%. He doesn't think he's going to make it because he can't. He either cancels this fight and you don't get to fight, or he takes fluids and misses weight. You choose. And Tim would have been like, okay, let's just fight. Whatever, mm-hmm. right? But that doesn't appear to at all to be what happened.
I'm not defending him.
And
I'm just telling you the reasoning he's laid out at this point.
He just looked awful. He looked out of shape and awful. And so the other thing I would say is you got to stop walking around at 220 or 225.
I read some rumors that he's got an eating disorder. No, don't. I wasn't making a joke there. So, I mean, no, but you could see.
Well, no, I mean,
it could affect a fighter like that.
That was one of the reasons that he shut down his, right, like why he can't own a steak restaurant. Because he wasn't making.
Is that real?
He doesn't own the restaurant anymore, right? Because he couldn't own the steak. Goodness. I don't know if he has, whatever you're talking about, I have no knowledge of, so I'm not making fun of it. I do know that he did own a steak restaurant and no longer owns it. So that would lead into your theory if that's
actually because he ate all the steak, is what you're saying.
Because no one could eat there.
Because the food was gone.
Because he ate it all. This is terrible.
Nurmagomedov bought the restaurant.
Yes, he turned it into Tiramisu's by Nurmagomedov.
Let's move along.
Okay. So, long story short, if you don't have a history of that or you notified them that week of, okay, stuff happens. I feel bad that you feel bad or whatever, but you've got a bunch of priors, let's say, in the conviction vernacular. It's not like... Not like this is a new thing for you. You just missed it one time. It's a thing that you've been struggling with since you got here.
Right, yeah. You didn't have a couple extra drinks tonight. This is like your third DUI.
Exactly. So I'm way less empathetic to that sort of thing than if it was just a one-time thing and you had a flu or a fever or whatever. I get it. And you go, hey, Ken, I know we're fighting. I'm going to give you 20% of the purse because I really want to do this, but I've got to take these fluids and I'm going to miss weight by 3 pounds.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you.
But I don't think that's what happened. In the strawweight division.
Speaking of losing fluids.
We had some fluid loss.
Now, wait. Here's my question.
This
has been run over plenty on the internet. But I thought we had the Tim Sylvia rule. Like, as soon as that happened.
No, I thought the same thing, that it's over.
The fight's over.
Yeah.
It wasn't over.
No.
I mean,
she had to be choked to death for 15 minutes.
Right. I mean, I get that, you know, you want to give Felice a chance to finish the fight, but I thought it was over because that's super disgusting.
It's super disgusting. I don't disagree with you. I also thought that was the rule.
Maybe that's why Tim Bosch beat the crap out of Johnny. He didn't want to have to go to the mat.
Right. But what I would say is,
like, we are not going to the ground.
Is Felice looked great in that fight.
She did.
Looked fantastic. You know, and kudos to Justine Kish for how she dealt with this on Twitter was amazing. But B, like, to essentially be in a choke for 15 straight minutes and be like, nah, I'm good. Mm. We're going to go to the judge's scorecard.
You think Mario Yamasaki was somewhere just like having heart palpitations?
Right.
Like, he watched that fight and that's why he ended up stopping the other fight so quick.
Yes, because he also didn't want to go to the mat.
Right. Nobody wanted to touch the mat afterwards. Okay, but again, and I'm not sure because I do remember this weird disclaimer. Remember at the beginning of the card, did you see the Oklahoma has not yet adopted the new unified rule. So, I mean, that has to do with the hand thing. I wonder if the Tim Sylvia poop rule is in there. I don't know.
Yes. They have not adopted the 3-point stance addendum and also shitting yourself on the mat.
Right,
the
yeah.
They haven't adopted.
Yeah, and if you Google poop and fighting, it's not helpful.
Nope.
To researching the issue.
It isn't. So please don't do that at work.
And why are so many of these sites in German?
Yes. So the other couple fights I want to talk about before we get to BJ Penn is Dominic Reyes taking on Christensen, TKO at 29 seconds. Why do I want to bring that one up? Because maybe you don't even know who that kid is.
I do not.
But a month ago, he was in a fight that went viral because his opponent was trash talking and he head kicked him into the next round like the next row. Like he just destroyed that guy in 29 seconds, shows up in the UFC and does seemingly the same thing to Christensen. So keep an eye out for Dominic Reyes and see what he can do at light heavyweight, because Ken and I have talked about for maybe 2 years at this point that this is a division that needs a dude like this.
Well, and that's always been a division that was bread and butter for UFC.
Yes.
Because other than the Brock Lesnar days, the heavyweights have not really panned out as far as buy rates and star power.
Yep.
But you've always had the light heavyweights have been the guys that most everybody knows from the UFC, whether it's Chuck Liddell or Jon Jones, Daniel Cormier now. That's that division that's kind of in that sweet spot. The dudes are huge, but they're athletic.
American fans know how to pronounce Glover Teixeira.
Exactly.
If that'll tell you anything.
Right. So, I mean, that's always been that sweet spot for the UFC. And if you see a guy like Reyes who could be a formidable opponent for Jones or Cormier coming out of that fight.
I'm not saying that yet, but, you need guys like this in this division.
But, I mean, he does this two or three more times.
Yep.
Where else do you put him? That's where you put him.
Yes.
That's what that division is right now.
Yes, you do. And then in the lightweight division, to kick off the prelim into main card slot, so from Fox Sports 2 to Fox Sports 1, Clay Guida defeating Eric Koch, looking like a brand new fighter. So very excited to see what's happening with Guida as he's made some adjustments in his game and looked really great against Eric Koch, which leads us to... Please.
I thought he looked good, but I really, that's one of those fights I was watching. I'm like, can this fight be over? Because it's just so dominating.
Yeah.
Like,
but
I didn't see Eric Koch win a round. That's what I thought was interesting about some of the scores. Did you think he won a round?
I did not think he won a round. I'm not sure I would have given him
30-26. Yeah, you had 30-26, and then everybody else was 29-28.
There was a 29-26, and then a 29-28. So
that was weird.
Oklahoma joining the likes of New York City is to not actually know how to score
the
fight.
Well, you know, they haven't implemented the poop rule, so
right.
Apparently they're a little behind.
Which leads us to, please, sweet Christ, BJ Penn, either go to Bellator or retire, because that third round against Dead Deceiver, he was just aimlessly wandering around the octagon getting cracked in the dome.
Well, not just that, but I mean, I look at that fight, and I don't know who Dennis Seaver beats other than BJ Penn in that fight.
No one. He didn't look great either.
I mean,
which
that's...
is, you know, man...
I mean, he hasn't had a win since 2014 until he fought BJ Penn. They were definitely giving BJ Penn a shot. That's as big as a shot as you'll usually see in the UFC for one of those older dudes. And they were giving BJ Penn a chance with this guy coming off. Obviously, one of those losses was Conor McGregor. But, I mean, he hasn't won since he beat Charles Rosa back in 2014. So... interesting.
And in contrast, BJ Penn hasn't won in 7 years.
So that's longer.
So could we...
It's my public school math.
Could we go, please? Like, I just...
The old BJ's coming back.
No, he's not.
That's what they always tell us.
And he looked terrible.
You've got his fight record up over there.
You know, he is lost. So we'll go back to 2010 in April. He lost to Frankie Edgar twice, beat Matt Hughes, draws with John Fitch, and then Diaz, that's in 2011 is when I said I wanted him to never fight again.
It is interesting, though, because they're giving him a lot of shots, and you can see the competition progressively get lesser.
So he goes Diaz to Rory McDonald to Frankie Edgar to Yair Rodriguez down to Dennis Seaver.
Right. And obviously those first three guys are legit and probably interchangeable, but it looked like they were trying to help out BJ Penn here, and it wasn't happening.
Yeah, and
they I mean, Dennis Seaver hasn't fought in 2 years.
No.
So he's off two losses and hasn't fought in 2 years. And yeah, I think we got to be done with BJ, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Dude's been fighting 20 something years.
And you know, it's hard to not.
Like, if he and Vitor were in the same weight class, Vitor Belfort, then I would take both of those fighters against only each other. But they're not.
Yeah, I would do that too. But I mean, this is what's really difficult about these conversations and things that we don't get into very often. So we'll close the show with something like this, is that when you go on a 5.5, we'll count the draw as a half, like 5.5, 6-fight losing streak at the end of your career that you didn't need to do, it doesn't. It can't help but tarnish your record of probably one of the best fighters in his prime of all time.
Oh, of course. Of course, because he kept trying to go back to the well.
And he needs to not. Like I said earlier, if he wants to go to Bellator and they want to set something up there at 170 against somebody, whatever, fine. But I wouldn't even – I absolutely would not even watch him against GSP at this point.
Oh, no. I don't – yeah. I mean, we'll obviously have to see what happens with GSP.
I don't even care. I think he's, like, without seeing GSP, I'm telling you, there's no way.
Well, I mean, honestly, and we won't get into this now, but I think he's going to get murdered by anybody who wins in that 170.
I don't have a doubt about that either.
I mean, he's going to cut all the way back down in his first fight back.
Woo. I still don't think, I think he murders BJ Penn.
GSP?
Yeah.
No matter what happens in that fight?
No matter what.
Wow.
No matter what.
So, Eric, I mean, we knew you were done last week. Now you're really done.
Well, but, you know, that Nick Diaz fight was probably one of the scariest things I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
You actually let a human being in the highest level of this sport get beat to death for 15 minutes.
Yeah, that was an insane fight.
For the last 7 minutes of that fight, so halfway through the second and into the third, the announcers are screaming for them to throw the towel in.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Right? Like, he didn't need to come back from that.
I sense your frustration. I can't do anything for you.
Well, because, like, guys like this don't need to give any more.
No, they don't.
You literally blazed a trail, and everybody else who was with you, including some who weren't with you who came after you, Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin, have went, yeah, I'm out. I'm going to go do TV.
And not with them 10 years after him.
That's what I'm saying. Like, those guys are already gone and collecting checks by being on TV. Half of your compatriots are on TV as a backup plan just in case it doesn't work out. Dominic Cruz, one of the best fighters on planet Earth right now, not altogether sure if his career is going to continue after that fight with Cody Garbrandt, so he's also got a backup plan. And I will tell you this, if you didn't like the fights from Oklahoma City, I will say that Dominic Cruz was spectacular in his position as the announcer on Sunday night. He was awesome.
Oh yeah, I think he's doing a great job.
Awesome. So there's that. This weekend, there is no UFC or Bellator to speak of, so you will have to find something else to do with your time. Like, I don't know, spend time with your family or watch Conor McGregor Instagram videos as he prepares for his fight against Floyd Mayweather. And we will be back next week to talk about the post-4th of July card. Robert Whittaker, I believe, is going to join the show, so we'll ask him about the interim championship. And then whatever else blows up over the course of the weekend.
Speaking of legends with BJ Penn, Matt Hughes, an update on his condition. His family has said that he's improving and continues to show heart and determination each day. Not real specific in what's going on there, but apparently doing a little bit better after that accident with a train.
Terrible, terrible thing. And we'll keep you updated with that on the Facebook page at Wow Show for Facebook and Twitter. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.